What's up, you guys? Sean Ross Sapp, Fightful here with a name you know. You formerly knew her as Persia, but now you're going to get to know her as Steph DeLander. Steph, how you doing?
Hi. I'm good. It's weird. It's like, what I've been thinking about is, you know, obviously I've been released recently, and a lot of people, when they've been released before me, have been really positive. And I've kind of been like, oh, surely that's just kind of a, you know, surely that's not real. That's just them trying to make themselves feel better. But the last week I've been feeling really good. I don't know if this is just a phase, but I'm writing it out. So I feel good right now.
So as we're alluding to, unfortunately you were released on, I believe it was April 29th. With a round of NXT cuts, and that's always a bummer to hear, especially with the NXT 2.0 brand being what it was, and you figuring into that show so much. I mean, you were an integral part of that show. What went through your mind, like, sort of as that happened?
As it happened, it's obviously, like, I don't want to say it's a shock, because I don't think you can say it's a shock with the way that it's been since I've been here. Obviously it's heartbreaking. Like, WWE is my dream job, and to lose that is obviously a huge loss. But I've been thinking about it a lot, and yeah, since I've been at WWE, like the last year, these kind of cuts have been coming very often and also kind of out of nowhere. So I think it would be like silly to say I was so shocked and so blindsided, because the way that it is at the moment is it's kind of like, well, you know, it's happening at some point. Like, you know, that phone call is going to ring, like it's going to come. So I really wish it wasn't right now. I feel like I had a lot more to do with WWE, but I wouldn't say it's such a shock, because I don't think there are many people that could be completely 100% confident that they're safe right now.
And of course, when 10 people get released, there's going to be people of varying emotions. There's going to be people that are devastated by it. There's going to be people that wanted out. Then there's going to be people kind of in the middle. You seem to have found a silver lining, so to speak, as you have a pretty positive demeanor following a situation like that, which could devastate some for sure.
Yeah, I think it's one of those things where, you know, I love inspirational quotes, and it's very lame, but it's not about what happened to you, it's how you react to it, you know. And I could very easily let this thing that's happened kind of like destroy me and tuck my tail between my legs and cower home and do all those things, or I can try and find the positives in the situation, which I truly believe there are some positives in this situation, and make the most of it and just kind of continue with everything that I did before WWE. Cause, you know, like, I started wrestling training when it was 2015. So, you know, I hustled on the indies, I grinded, I did all of these things to get myself from an unknown wrestler in Australia to WWE. So it's just kind of like remembering that mind frame and that mindset that I had beforehand, and now taking what I've learned in the last year and applying that and just creating like the best version of myself and the best career that I can for myself.
And there was a bit of a transition just in the time that you were there, from they went away from signing a lot of independent wrestlers to signing more athletes and models, which the ironic thing is, like, Indy Hartwell, Steph DeLander, you're both like near 6 feet tall. You could pass as pro basketball players if you wanted to. You all fit right in with that mold while still maintaining this incredible amount of experience that preceded your WWE run. What did you think when you saw sort of the transition there? Because there was a lot of transition just in the time that you were there.
There was a huge transition. I think I arrived really right as it was kind of changing over. Obviously, COVID changed a lot of things within WWE. But like, I literally arrived as they were wrapping up the Black and Gold era, doing the last couple of TVs as NXT Black and Gold. I think Triple H was there for like a few weeks, and then obviously he had his health problems and he disappeared. So I came in literally like as I was arriving and settling in, all of these huge changes were happening. Like, the first thing I ever did on TV was be a bridesmaid in Indy's wedding, which was the first ever 2.0 episode.
Yeah.
So yeah, I was kind of like smack bang in the middle of all of these changes. Yeah, it's one of those things where it was a lot, and it's kind of like you see it and you process it as you're there, and you can kind of, you know, if you know enough about wrestling and business and WWE and all of those things, like, you know that things go in waves, and you know that there's trends that, you know, they want at a certain time, and you can kind of see if you fit into that or if you don't. You can also kind of see who is kind of being positioned for certain things and who isn't. But yeah, like, and I think the best way to kind of break it down is like, all of the people that hired me don't work for WWE anymore. Like, I was hired by Regal, I was hired by Canyon, and also, who else was there? It was Regal, Canyon, and someone else. Oh, Triple H, obviously. Yeah. Obviously, he's still involved, but he is not in the same role that he was before. So I think that kind of says it all. It's like, all of the people that wanted me for this 2.0, for this black and gold brand, well, the brand doesn't exist anymore. And also the people that wanted me don't even work there. So yeah, I think there's all of those things you kind of process while you're there, and you kind of go, oh, like, this isn't good, you know, but it is what it is.
And I think a lot of people didn't know that, because they came to know you strictly on 2.0, because that's when you popped up, but you were signed before that. And in my watching NXT 2.0, it seems like you fit in very well there. I thought that you worked really well with Duke and Indy and Dexter and that stuff. When you start to get, like, I don't want to say notified, but like, are you told at any point, like, when you're hired, like, NXT's about to change? Or was it one of those things where you show up there and you start to hear, oh, well, the changes are coming?
I mean, with wrestling in general, and with WWE, like, it's, there's not a whole lot. I mean, for me personally anyways, and I think because it was such a transitional period, there wasn't like a concrete sit down, hey guys, this is what we're doing. It was kind of in bits and bobs. It was kind of like, oh, we've got this new song by Wale, and we've got the colorful logos, and we're refitting the arena. And so these changes were kind of like happening each week slowly. But it wasn't like an instant bam, we're changing everything over. But I think that was kind of all down the line. Like, I'm not even sure if, like, the real top people, like the people that run NXT, I'm not even sure if they 100% knew what was going on with the changes. It was just kind of like flying by the seat of your pants, like it always is in wrestling, and just like taking what comes at you and working with it and making the most out of it. Yeah, so it wasn't like a bam, one meeting and we've flipped. It was more of a gradual process.
Bron Breakker is a two-time NXT champion now. He told me that he found out he was debuting 16 hours before he debuted. And he is like who they built the show around. So it's very clear, like, a lot of this stuff, some of it was planned out because you have to brand it and change a show on the USA Network. But there's a lot of aspects of this that necessarily aren't. The process of you getting signed, what was that like? Who did you talk to during that period? And how was that? Because it's got to be, like, much different for somebody that's got to switch continents.
Yeah, so my process was actually a lot longer than what I think a lot of people realize. So basically, to kind of summarize it, in April of 2019, I did a Mania Week. So I think it was like my second or third Mania Week on the Indies. And I did a few shows. And there was an indie show that I did. And I was on it. Indy Hartwell was on it. Shazza was there. And a few others were there.
That's
I think
a bummer.
Jess might have been on that too.
hate to hear that Shazza was there. Hate to hear it.
Right? I know. Well, I mean, it is what it is. Yeah, so there was quite a few of us on that, and it was just an indie show in New Jersey. Like, we didn't hear anything of it, didn't know anything of it. Indy had already been in communication with Canyon about getting signed. I hadn't had anything to do with WWE. I also had returned from injury a month before, so I pretty much did a year on the indies, did 10 months out with an injury, and then returned like a month before I did this America trip. So my initial character was like a masked luchador gimmick. My name is Facebook. It's a whole thing. So I switched from that to Steph DeLander in this time. So I'd only been Steph DeLander for a few weeks. I had brand new gear I'd never wrestled in before. I wasn't even the Python powerhouse at this point. I was still figuring out myself. Anyway, so we're doing this show. I had like a really terrible match. It was like a seven-woman gauntlet, no entrance music, no nothing. Like it was an absolute free-for-all. So I had this match, and then all of a sudden, everyone's kind of chatting that Canyon and Regal were there, and we didn't know that. And I was like, oh my God, like I've just gone out and done this in front of them. Anyway, so it was intermission. Indy went up and spoke to Canyon. And I said to her, I'm like, should I go and speak to Canyon? And she was like, 100%, like, go right now. And I was like, oh my God, like, I didn't do well. I don't think I look very good. I don't know what I'm doing. Anyway, she forced me to. So I went up and I was like, hey, Canyon, my name's Steph. And I was expecting him to be like, you need to learn how to work. You need to look better. You need to, like, figure out all of your shit because this is not good. Anyway, I went up to him and he was like, you looked amazing. As soon as you came out, I was like, who is this? I wrote your name down. He was like, get my email address and we'll go from there. So I was like, oh shit. Oh my goodness. Okay. So then I came back. I knew it was Mania week. So I was like, I'm going to give it a week to like let everything kind of settle before I email him. I sent that email off. I didn't hear back for like another 3 or 4 weeks. And I was like, oh, you know, like whatever, you know, everyone makes a million promises in wrestling, but you know, just one of those things. And then it was I always mess up the date. I think it was the 11th of May or the first of May, some date in May. It was a Wednesday and it was midnight in 2019. And I was lying in bed and Indy messages me and she goes, hey, Canyon just called me and he offered me a contract. And I was like, oh my God, really? And she was like, yeah, 100%. And I was like, oh my God, he is on his phone right now. I was like, yes. I'm going to double text him. I'm going to send him another email. I don't care. So I pick up my phone. I'm like, hey, Canyon, don't know if you saw my last one. Here's a match, blah, blah. Put my phone down. A second later, ding. I was like, no, it can't be him. Surely not. Pick up my phone. I check my phone and it's Canyon. And he goes, hey, Steph, I spoke to Mr. Regal and he said that you would be a great hire as long as you have the right attitude. When will you be in the US or the UK? And I was like, floored. I just couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe that like all I had to do was send that message. You know what I mean? Like maybe I never would have come back again if I didn't chase up. Anyway, so that led to me doing a tryout in the UK in June of 2019. And I basically was told at that tryout that I was signed.
That's and incredible.
And I was told that I was going to be starting in January of 2020. Oh. And then obviously, it gets to January and they're like, oh, we're slowing down our incoming talent pipeline. So we're going to start you in March. I was like, okay, all good. And then it gets to March and then COVID hits. And then it's like, oh, we're going to shoot for, you know, August. And I'm like, okay, no worries. And then it gets to August and like, oh, we're going to shoot for November. And then it's, you know, so the next kind of 18 months, we're living in 3 month increments of waiting to hear back, then getting delayed, then waiting to hear back, then getting delayed. Wow. I couldn't really make any like long-term life decisions in Australia because I knew I was eventually going to move. I just didn't know if it was 3 months or 2 years. And it ended up being almost 2 years. And I finally got over in March of 2021. So from June 2019, I was told I was signed. To then, March 2021, I finally arrived.
That is wild. I mean, I know that obviously COVID slowed down an awful lot, but you're still in this very unique spot where you've got a lot of experience, but you're so young as well. So you've got like a full career ahead of you if you so choose. If you had any inquiries already about booking you, because I mean, I know that can be like... Like I told you, I don't like to seem like a vulture, so I never reach out to the people that are released. Like, hey, let me interview you. Like, is it like that with bookers, or are they hitting you up and saying, let's get this done?
To your point that you just said before, I'm in this really unique position where when I first started wrestling training when I was 18, I laid out my goals. I'm always very goal-oriented, so no matter what I'm doing, I'm always writing, like, short-term and long-term goals. And when I started wrestling training, I said, I want to have any sort of contact with WWE by 25, whether it's I've had an email chain with them, I've had a tryout, whatever it is, I just want some sort of contact. So to be hired and fired by 25, I definitely exceeded my own expectations. Like I signed my contract when I was 22. So it's kind of one of those things where I can sit here and be upset and go, I can't believe I got released when I was 25. Or I can go, oh my God, thank God I'm 25. Like there is so much left to do outside of wrestling. I think I would definitely be feeling a bit less positive if I was 35. Not to say that someone at 35 career is over, but yeah, I'm definitely still really young. So I'm really thankful that I have youth on my side and I do believe everything does work out for a reason. As far as bookings, I have had a lot of people reach out for matches and for signings. So I'm just in the process of kind of like filling my calendar. And also, you know, when I was 18 and when I was 20, I wanted to wrestle everywhere and do everything and have every single match. And no matter what it was, I wanted to do it. But now obviously I've been wrestling for quite a few years. I also did spend time in WWE. So it is a bit more important to me now that like I'm working for places that I want to work for. And I'm also having matches that I want to have. Of course I want to stay busy and I want to do all of these things, but at the same time, I'm also not going to take every single thing that comes my way just for the sake of looking like I've got the busiest calendar on earth. So I am being a little bit more selective of what I'm doing, but at the same time, I'm still staying open-minded and taking on a lot of things, which is cool. I'm just finding that balance.
So you dropped an interesting note in there. You had physically signed your contract at 22. So
yeah.
You had signed the deal well before that. So you were you like technically signed all the way through that, but still working indies and such?
Yeah. So I signed my contract in 2019, but I was still doing indies and doing all those things. So I was in this really weird limbo of like still wrestling back home to stay safe and to stay relevant. But at the same time, like I was being really careful. Like I wasn't doing any, like, God forbid I got injured. You know what I mean? Yeah. So like I was only wrestling people that I really trusted and I felt comfortable with, but it was a really tough time because I had signed, but I was like, I couldn't just put everything on hold and wrap myself in bubble wrap for 2 years or 3 years or 5 years, or God forbid they just burn my contract. You know what I mean? Like
yeah.
I couldn't do nothing. So I was still going to wrestling training and I was still having matches, and it was just, yeah, there was always this little fear of like, oh my God, imagine if I get hurt, you know, like that was a scary thought of like, I had so much that I had to be healthy for and to look forward to. But at the flip side, as I said, I couldn't just lock myself in my bedroom for 2 years. So yeah, but I did sign in 2019.
So how does that work? Do you have to, first off, I'm made of questions right now, because this is like one of the most interesting contract situations ever. And it wasn't on you. It wasn't on WWE. The pandemic happened and it was unprecedented, but like, are you getting paid by WWE? Does your contract time start then and then like expire accordingly? Can they freeze you? And do they have any say over like the bookings that you take during that period?
So I wasn't getting paid during that time. That would have been lovely.
Sure, sure.
Paid, but I mean, look, I understand it. They could have been paying me for 3 years to sit on my ass in Australia. So I wasn't expecting to get paid during that time. They didn't have any say over what I was or wasn't doing. It was just kind of like, be safe, stay in good shape, you know, be ready as soon as we need you. My contract time started as soon as I arrived in WWE.
Okay.
So like it was a 3 year contract that I signed in 2019 for my wage and all of those things, but that didn't actually get like executed until I arrived. Then I started getting the money. Then I started, you know, then my contract, I guess, officially begun, but all of the paperwork and everything was signed prior to me moving over.
So it's wild to think like your deal would have been coming up like right about now anyway, like around this time had the pandemic not happened. And as you mentioned, like there was no predicting that, like they couldn't at that point realistically say, oh yeah, we're going to burn 3 years of this deal with a pandemic. We didn't know how long anything was going to last. That's That's such an interesting aspect, because we would hear about people who were at the tryouts when they were physically at WWE tryouts, and they said, "No, you're all going home. The pandemic has started."
Yeah, I had some friends that were at that tryout that have since been signed. And yeah, they literally arrived. They did like maybe the medicals or like one day of something, and then they send them all home, which is crazy. But yeah, as far as like with the timing of everything, and like, of course, you know, I would have, I at the time, all I wanted to do was get to WWE as soon as possible. But again, I feel like there was a reason why I was delayed. You know, obviously the pandemic, but as far as like spiritually with my life, I feel like everything does work out for a reason. And I remember being back home, and like I would, you know, I would have moments of frustration and being upset, and also this uncertainty with COVID of like, what if it just literally never ends? Like, what if the borders never open and I can't ever go? Like, what if, yeah, and honestly, like the reality of it is there are a few Australian wrestlers that signed contracts with Ring of Honor and never were able to come over and do Ring of Honor. So it's like that, you know, that actually was a possibility. And I remember feeling those feelings, and I would speak to a few people that were in WWE, and I'd speak to Indy and Duke and those people, and they would kind of be like, yeah, but you know, we're locked in our houses for like months. You're at home in Australia, which is handling the pandemic so much better than America did. Like in America, people were dying, you know, you were here. Like, it was just a nightmare. Whereas in Australia, like they handled things so much better.
I did.
And they're like, you know, like it sucks, but right now you get to spend time with your family. You get to spend time with your partner. You get to spend time with your friends. You're living in beautiful Australia. You just get to be there for an extra year or whatever. So yeah, it was awful, but at the same time, like if I left when I did, I wouldn't have met my current partner. We wouldn't have been able to start dating and that kind of thing. So it's like, yeah, I think the timing, as much as it feels like the timing was awful, I think the timing also kind of worked out in the end.
And you mentioned Duke. I mean, his career took like such a unique twist there. He was on Raw for a while as a result of the pandemic in the Performance Center, and got some eyes on him there as well. Like, you never know. Like, there are so many trajectories that were adjusted by that. And another thing you had mentioned earlier about how you took a chance and you messaged Canyon because you knew he was on his phone. There are so many stories of circumstance like that. Like, Chelsea Green told me she guessed Paul Heyman's email and messaged him once, and then she was on, like, getting called up pretty soon. Like, you never know what will lead to that. And yours eventually led to you appearing in the wedding or the wedding party for Indy Hartwell. Do you think it was like, how great of a person is she after what you did to her at Melbourne City Wrestling to have you a part of that wedding party? I mean, to forgive and forget like that. What a gem.
I know. It's funny you mentioned that, because that was initially kind of where our story was going to go. So we were going to, I was going to turn on Indy. And we were going to kind of run through the same story that we had done at MCW, like even to the point where like I'd shown them like what we did in Melbourne, and I had told them all of the history of our friendship. Like I had meetings about, like I had told them everything and was like, this story writes itself. We literally did it in Australia, and then what the ultimate screw over for us to meant to be going within 3 months of each other. She gets it, and then I get screwed for
That's
2 years.
a
Like
great story.
yeah, I was like, this writes itself as far as I'm concerned. And like for wrestling, like, you know, reality is the easiest thing for the fans to connect to. And I was like, I don't think anything gets more real than this. So before the kind of 2.0 changeover, and even early days, that was kind of the way that we were going to go with the story. But then obviously everything changes in wrestling, and they decided to keep Indy and I together as a team for a bit longer. Then we started doing all the Duke and Dexter stuff. It was still eventually, I think, going to lead to a feud between myself and Indy. And it sucks that we weren't able to do that. But I also understand that it's like we're creating a television product, and where I was right now, like at when I first started, I didn't have enough of a following, or I hadn't done enough in WWE for people to care about me enough to make that story as juicy as it could have been. Whereas I think if we let all this Index and Doja stuff play out, and then we did the big Persia versus Indy, then I think it would have been like a much hotter story. And that's what they said to me, and I agree with them. And yeah, like the, you know, not for nothing, like the stuff that we did with Index and Doja, I mean, I have so many people have so many opinions on it. But at the end of the day, I'm like, I was on TMZ, and I don't think just a 5-minute wrestling match would have got me there. So I have no regrets about anything.
So I was going to ask you about that. I mean, NXT 2.0 is just categorically different. And even Tony Khan of AEW, he was like, do I like 2.0 more than I like the original NXT? No, but for what WWE is doing, why wouldn't they do 2.0? That's what they're creating. This is a more streamlined way to create their stars, so it makes a lot of sense. So it was more in line, like, for example, Karen Q becoming Wendy Chu, that is ready-made a WWE star right there. Like, the way that they had presented so many of you guys, you could see any of you popping up on the main roster and fitting right in without the changes that a lot of people have had to go through. What was your favorite thing that you did on NXT 2.0?
You know, my favorite thing that I did, I think, which is pretty ridiculous, but I think my favorite thing was when I had a...
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
A triple threat match that was meant to be me, JC Jane, and Io Shirai. Mm-hmm. And then JC Jane just dies. And then I went on the fly with Io for like 6 minutes. And that was like, I think that was my second match on TV. And yeah, to be in that situation and to be able to like keep it cool and work through it with Io, like that was such an amazing feeling. And I'm like really grateful that I was able to do that. Obviously, like, the ladder match for the titles was amazing. Yes. And you know what I mean? Like I had a lot of cool moments, honestly, for a year. But like the thing that sticks out of like, oh, I'm so glad in hindsight that that happened. I'm really glad for that, because I feel like that kind of, that was a huge, like really in the deep end. Like I didn't know how TV wrestling worked at that point. I didn't know how anything worked. Like in that moment, I just knew like, I know how, like I stood up, and I looked around and I looked at the turnbuckles and I saw the WWE on the turnbuckle. And I said, like, I've been in a wrestling ring for 5 years. It's the same thing. Doesn't matter if it's a live TV show. Doesn't matter if Shawn Michaels is on the other end of the headset. I know how to wrestle right now when all of the plans are completely out of the window. I just have to wrestle, you know? So I think that was a really cool moment personally for me.
Switching to the 20x20 ring. Were there any adjustments to that? Because I get that the first time I was ever in a 20x20 ring after working in like 16, 18s, it like that extra step to the ropes or that extra stride or anything like that. I mean, ultimately you get used to the ropes, all that stuff being a little bit differently. Were there any adjustments you had to make?
Yeah, it's crazy. It is insane. Like my first ever training session at WWE, I think I'm pretty sure it was Doudrop's first one in America too, because we kind of arrived at the same time.
Yeah.
And we were in Coach Bloom's class. And I think he was just having one of his Coach Bloom days where he was like, we're blowing up today. Like everyone is blowing up. And like Doudrop and I aren't tiny girls, you know, like we're carrying extra weight. And so, and like my cardio is decent, but the stuff that he had us doing, and we, it was so much running. Mm-hmm. And you don't realize that a couple extra steps times 10 times 20 times whatever, it really, you know, that really adds to it. So yeah, that first training session was like just incredible. Like I was running it with Gigi Dolan, and she was like whispering to me. She was like, just don't stop. It doesn't matter. Just don't stop. He doesn't care as long as you just keep going. And I was like, I can't do it. So yeah, that first day was like a real eye opener of like, oh my goodness. Like this is like a different level. But yeah, the ring changes a lot. There's so much more that goes into it than I think a lot of people realize. Especially when you've spent all of your training in a, I don't even know if my ring back home is a 16 or an 18. I think it might be an 18, but anyways, you learn all of these movements for a different size square. You know exactly how many steps I need to do to hit the ropes, how many steps I need to do to go under and up and over, you know what I mean? Like all of those things. So when it changes, it definitely is an adjustment period for sure.
Do you remember the worst ring you've ever worked in?
Oh, there's been a few.
There can be some shady ones. Like when you get in there and ones that have like the warped plywood underneath and people are twisting their knees. Oh my God. Yeah.
There's nothing in particular that really sticks out. And that's not because I don't want to bury anyone. I literally sure. just, I would, if your ring's that bad, I would say it.
Of course.
But there's nothing that, in Australia, there's a few really bad ones. Luckily, I don't do anything super high flying. Like my partner, he does heaps of lucha drags and springboard stuff. And anyone that springboards or anything like that, I'm like, I feel so bad for them because a lot of the ropes are really dodgy. So thankfully, if I get in a ring and the ropes are really dodgy, I'm just like, ugh, I'm just going to avoid hitting the ropes. If the canvas is like lumpy or if it's like a really hard bump or something, then again, it's just kind of like, well, maybe we'll limit the bumps or maybe we'll do this or that. But that was a big thing, like getting to WWE. And not that the rings are like super, super soft or anything, because like a wrestling ring is still a wrestling ring. Like they're like that TV ring is pretty brutal because the bump sounds amazing, right? Like it's such a nice snap. And I think that might be part of why it is quite a hard bump. Yeah. But yeah, just everything being... very nice, very perfect, very together, very, you know, they've got, it's the biggest wrestling company in the world. Like they've got the best rings. They've got the best people to maintenance them and to make sure they're amazing. So that was like a huge luxury coming from the indies. And that's one of those things where it's like, ugh, these athletes don't even know. Like they don't even know what else is out there that we've had to deal with on the indies.
Sometimes you'll get like those rock hard, like boxing-esque rings, six-sided rings with no give. Like you never know. Did you spend any time in the high flyer ring?
I did. I loved it. I love the high flyer ring. I'm actually like a lot more athletic than people think I am because of my size. I have a lovely moonsault that I've never done in a match. I did it on a PC Live in-house show against Indy Hartwell once.
Nice.
I was like, I'm gonna do this just to ball out. I've never done it in a match, but yeah, I can do a bit more than people think I can. So yeah, I used to love that ring because it's like literally just like a huge, you know, foam pit. So you just go in and you do a bunch of dumb stuff and you try your flips and it's fun. I love that ring.
PC Live stuff fascinates me. Like I love hearing stuff that emanate from that because sometimes there will be some future gimmicks or stables or anything pop up. Then there will just be some stuff that they kind of throw at the wall and see, will this work? Will this person work? But I did solicit some questions, and these are just from completely random people, nobody that you would know. And this person says, what's your favorite country song to dance to at Cowboys?
Oh, I hate country. I hate country.
I do too. I'm from Kentucky, and I hate country.
So Indy Hartwell loves country. She is obsessed. Grayson Waller loves country. Like, they both are obsessed. I don't get it. Like, we went to Nashville at the end of last year, and Indy, when she watches this, she'll know exactly what I'm talking about. She just turned into a different person. Like, it was the happiest I've ever seen her. I don't think she had ever been that happy before. I don't think she's been that happy since. She just, like, ultimately thrived in Nashville. And obviously Grayson had a great time. So I don't even, any country song, I'm like, ugh. I get in her car and we're driving somewhere and she puts country on. Or, like, we would be in the gym at WWE and she would try and get them to put country on. And I'm like, no, I hate it. No country for me.
Same person submitted two more questions. They say, do you really see yourself as a powerhouse, and whose finisher is better, yours or Brock Lesnar's?
Yes, I do see myself as a powerhouse. Otherwise, I wouldn't call myself that. I'm almost 6 feet tall, if you didn't know. So
this comes from a dewdrop.
Dewdrop, as in actual dewdrop?
I don't know. It's such a common name. You know, it could be anybody.
Is it also? It really is. Is it the legitimate dewdrop?
Of course, it's dewdrop. Of course, it's the actual dewdrop.
Oh well, that's even funnier because we always. No, I was like, this is some random like. Instagram person who's trying to roast me.
Oh no.
Here's
the thing. She said she'll absolutely know it was me when you asked that. And yes. You didn't.
No, because this is why. So I thought this was like a random person trying to roast me. But I had a lot of situations in WWE where, and look, this is the way it is for everyone. You get told different stuff every week. So you're trying to find yourself and you're trying to find all of these things. But there was definitely a point of contention with a particular coach who would hit me with the, I don't really know if you're a powerhouse. I don't really know if you're that strong. I don't really know if you, and I'm like, oh my goodness. Like, if I'm not that, then what am I? Like, I'm literally you're not even that tall. I'm like, I'm almost 6 foot tall and I'm a girl. Like, I'm pretty big.
They saw that, like, moonsault on PC Live and that changed everything for them.
Like, Rhea Ripley's 5'7", I think. Like, I'm 5'11". Like, I'm pretty big.
To be fair to Rhea, I asked her about that. I was like, hey, you're the tallest 5'7" woman ever. And she was like, I think I'm 5'8.5" now since I've came over. So, like,
she grew.
Yes,
it's the Florida food.
She grew, and she was like, I stand up really tall. She's like, most people are hunched over. I got the lifts. So she said that she presents herself really tall.
And that's it. I did the same thing. I would always be wearing heels. I would always try and put myself in the frame where you look the biggest. But perception's reality. Like, you got to do it. But yeah, as far as whose finisher is better, Brock Lesnar. Brock can have it. Mine's not an F5 anymore. It's a TKO.
Well, Dewdrop, when I first interviewed her, specifically named you as a person who helped her transition to the States and kept her sane, so to speak. This was before you had even debuted on NXT TV. I think I asked her this in August, and she had mentioned your name. What was that like, having somebody who was going through a lot of the same things that you were? Although, you know, she was on Raw, so it was a little bit different.
It was like such a blessing and such a, just, she's just incredible. And the funny thing is, the night before I got fired, I was hanging out with Kaylee and I was hanging out with Dewdrop, and it was just, they're just such like positive people and such real people in a world of a lot of bullshit. So I honestly think like spending that time with them the night before and then getting fired, like, I did have this feeling of like, nah, everything's going to be okay. And like, we had spoken about it the night before because, you know, it's a, you have to think, if you don't think about it, you're an idiot. You know what I mean? Cause it's going to happen at some point. So, but yeah, having Dewdrop and Kaylee here is such a breath of fresh air. When I first moved here, Dewdrop was here within like, I think a month. And I had initially met her at my UK tryout. And I just remember getting like such good energy from her. And I mean, look, I'm a mark. I'm a indie wrestler at heart. I've been loving this shit for years. So like, I knew about Dewdrop when she was Viper years ago wrestling in Japan. And I would just be like, who is this girl? She's amazing. Like, I watched her in the Mae Young Classic. Like, I followed her career. I don't even know if I've even told her this shit, but I followed her career for years before I even met her initially. And then when I did meet her, I was just, I just couldn't believe like how real and positive she is. So yeah, having her here and like going through it all together, going through moving to America as a foreigner, which there is so much more involved in that than people realize, and being able to do that kind of hand in hand with her was so amazing. I'm so thankful for her.
Every time I see her, just her disposition is like will make your mood better, because the few times I've seen her have been WWE media, obviously, but she's so wonderful to talk to.
Yeah.
Just think the world of her. So you're at a unique point in your career. What do you see in your future? What is next for Steph DeLander?
I mean, I don't want to have tickets on myself, but I feel like there's a lot of really cool stuff that's going to come my way and that I've already lined up. I hate to be vague. I hate when people are like talking in riddles about all this cool shit that they're doing. And it's like, just say it. obviously I can't just say anything, but yeah, I'm genuinely very excited for the future. And I think having that excitement really helps cope with what just happened, because my life isn't over. My career isn't over. It's just started. In fact, like there are so many good things to come my way. Like I'm definitely going to be staying in wrestling. Where I end up, I don't know. I mean, there are more opportunities now in wrestling, obviously, we know, than there ever has been before. So I think I think I'm in a good position, honestly, to have a further successful career within wrestling.
I do too. I think you can look at this as a positive. I mean, TV experience at the highest level. You made an awful lot of great connections there as well. Some of which are still there. Some of which have moved on to other places too, because of the unique time that you came in. So I think you're in a pretty good spot, I would say.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I think so too. And that's the thing. Like I was even saying it to my mom earlier today, like before WWE, I did a bit of stuff on the American Indies. So I know a lot of promoters. I know a lot of people. I have a lot of friends. And then with WWE, I've made a whole bunch more connections. And to your point, a lot of them have left. So like a lot of these coaches that I had these connections with are now producers or coaches elsewhere. And these wrestlers that are, you know, quite high up that I've, you know, made connections with again, they're also elsewhere. So it's kind of like a blessing and a curse, but in my head right now, I honestly think, you know, it's looking pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, you were working Thunder Rosa years ago before
that was indie, not me. I've never worked Thunder Rosa.
Really?
Yeah, that was indie.
Interesting.
It's okay. Everyone gets us confused.
Of course.
She worked Thunder Rosa. It was like, I think like WrestleCon. It was like WrestleMania. Her first ever WrestleMania weekend.
You're right. My gosh. I did get you all mixed up. Now,
at WWE, I would say at least three times a week, someone would call me Indy and her Persia, or like Steph and Sam or whatever. Like people would come up to me constantly like, hey, Sam, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, we don't even like, okay, we're Australian and we're tall and we have black hair, but like you would not believe how many people constantly get us confused.
I don't even think it was WrestleMania weekend. I thought it was like a Rise show or maybe you all weren't in the ring at the same time or something.
Thunder Rosa?
Maybe I'm misremembering. I'm probably misremembering.
Look, if I wrestled her on Rise 5 years ago.
I think you would know better than me, honestly. I feel like you would know better than me.
Yeah, I am pretty confident I've never touched Thunder Rosa.
Well, by God, I'm going to make an introduction because I like Thunder Rosa. I know Thunder Rosa. Speaking of, there are women's promotions popping up everywhere in the States. You got Thunder Rosa with Mission Pro. You've got the Women's Wrestling Army. You've got WOW that it's taping TV this week. There's a lot of that. That has like really blown up just since the pandemic as well. I mean, that's got to be something that you look to and you're pretty optimistic about as well.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, women's wrestling is bigger now than it's ever been. And as I said, like I've been, you know, in the business for like 6 years now or so. So to see the waves of what it's gone through, and everything goes in waves, whether it's WWE, whether it's on the indies, wherever it is. But the women's wrestling on the independents and other companies outside of WWE is looking very, very bright. And within WWE, of course, too. But for where I'm at right now, I'm feeling very optimistic as a female in wrestling.
You had mentioned when we talked about Doudrop that you all were kind of, I don't know if you meant you were discussing the possibility of releases that night. I can tell you that it was maybe 2 days before Easter. I had tons of wrestlers that were contacting me and they're like, are there releases? Are there releases? And there were rumors. Was that something that was being discussed like among yourself and others?
I mean, well, it's one of those things where you always know releases are going to come after WrestleMania. Sure. So I think that's a huge, you know, everyone kind of gets their brain thinking. And then also the quarterly call coming up or whatever it is, yep, that also, you know, makes you think about it. And because they hadn't done any this year, you know, we hadn't been told anything, but you know, you see it enough and you go, it's been longer than about 3 months. You know, you start to kind of get those thoughts going, and then enough people think the same thing. And then whether it's true or not, you know what wrestling's like, everyone talks to each other. So there was a feeling of releases are coming soon. And yeah, I mean, it's, as I said, it's one of those things where I think, and it's not a healthy thing to sit there and to stress about it constantly. And that's something that I wish I could have let go of that feeling a lot more, but personally I just couldn't. I mean, it did worry me a lot. So, I mean, it's my dream job. Of course I was terrified of getting fired, especially seeing the way that things panned out with all the releases. You know, within a month of me arriving, there was all of the huge ones last year with like the Iconics and all of those people. So pretty much the second I landed, it was like, oh my God, what's going on? And it kind of didn't stop. So I think there was a general, I can't speak on behalf of everyone, but for me, it's something that I worried about quite a lot. And, you know, but it's worry, but it's also kind of realism of like, personally, if I was going to sit and put my head in the sand and just go, la, 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 that doesn't help me. That's not going to change it. Sure. It's not going to make it not happen. I need to at least think about it and go, right, well, if this does happen, what's my next move? What am I doing? How am I going to, you know, get all of my ducks in a row so that I can continue and have a career beyond this? So everyone handles it differently. But for me, it was a thought on my brain often.
And we obviously, you've got a very positive reaction to all this, all things considered. How was the call? Did they seem open to like maybe the doors open in the future? Because again, you're 25 years old. It's not like you're wrapping up or anything.
Yeah, I mean, the call itself, as much as I wasn't totally blindsided by it at the same time, you look down and you see Stanford and you go, well, that's me. Yeah. So it was a really short phone call, but I think that's just because I was like, I want to end this before I start crying on this phone call. And obviously, that's a call that they've made a million times. That's a call that they were making multiple of that day. So like for that particular call, I didn't really see the value in trying to have this long drawn out negotiation style thing. Sure. Where I was like, that doesn't, you know, seem fitting. But I have spoken to a few people since. And yeah, everything's always kind of followed up with like but it's wrestling. Yeah. The door is always open. Like, never say never. And to your point, like, because of my youth and all of those kind of things, again, I don't want to sit here and be like, they're going to want to sign me in a year. Like, you know what I mean? I'm not going to say any of those things, but we've seen plenty of people leave WWE and come back. And yeah, from what I was told, the door is always open. Yeah.
I mean, you look at the trajectory of so many of the recent WWE champions, Drew McIntyre, Bobby Lashley, AJ Styles. These people were under WWE contract. They left or were released. They came back and they achieved great heights. Brock Lesnar left WWE. There's a ton of people that did that. So obviously there's a template there of people going out and killing it elsewhere, or just getting famous elsewhere outside of wrestling and coming back. What do you want people to know about Steph DeLander after all this? We said before this, I even said, let's not do the clickbaity headline. What do you want the headline to be? That's what I want to know.
Oh, goodness. I mean, I don't know what I want the headline to be, but I think I want people to know, like I've had a lot of people send me messages and it's so like, I totally understand it. And it's one of those things. And because when I've had friends released, what do you say? Like, what a weird, uncomfortable thing. Mm-hmm. But I've had a few messages where it's like, it seems like it's mourning and it's like, I've died and that's it for me. And it's done. And it's, you know what I mean? Like a lot of like, you should be proud of what you did. And it's like, no, like I've got so much more, you know? And I think that's kind of what I want the perception to be of like, it's not that I had this dream ripped away from me. It's a change of course, which truly I believe is going to lead to actually a lot more and a lot of really big things. So I think that's what I want it to be. Like, I don't want it to be a sad, like I said it to my mom, I said, put the tiny violin away. Like, this doesn't help anything. And this, I don't need that. Like, I can be sad myself if I want to, but I don't want the sadness and the, I'm so sorry. And I appreciate it. I love it. You know, like I can't believe how many people have reached out to me, but I'm not looking at it as a sad thing. And I know that sounds like bullshit, but I'm actually not. I want it to be this, you know, I want people to see the way that I'm seeing, which is like, yeah, it's a change of course that I wasn't expecting right now. But I think I'm going to look back in a year or 2 years and go, thank God that happened when it did, you know?
So let the people know where they can support you. I know your handles are going to be changing as soon as they can. So we have what will be the handle right over there. But let the people know where they can support you, where they can follow you, where they can buy merch or anything.
Yeah, so obviously, as we spoke about before, my handles on Twitter and Instagram are going to be changing to @StephDeLander. I am opening this week within the next day or two an OnlyFans, which is congrats. Very exciting. Thank you. So I will have an OnlyFans. I'm also setting up a pro wrestling tees in the next couple of days and a big cartel for 8x10s and other merch. So I will have a lot of those links ready in the next couple of days. I'm just obviously in the administration portion of it, just getting it all set up. But yeah, that'll be where people can support me and all of my merchandise as well as like my Amazon wish list, but I'll have a link tree with everything. And then it'll just be catching me at bookings and at signings because I've got a whole bunch of stuff coming up.
Guys, support her. Check her out. Again, those socials will change as soon as they're able to. But Steph, you've been so generous with your time today. I want to thank you so much. I know it's been a huge week for you, positive, negative, indifferent, whatever the emotions may be at any given time. But I want to thank you for taking the time to speak with us because I know that you get a lot of these inquiries.
Yeah, no, thank you so much. And as soon as I was let go, it was, you know, what's the next move? And I'd spoken to Chelsea and Deonna and a few other people. And, you know, I already knew I wanted to interview with you, but they were like, make sure you do Sean Rossap. And I was like,
shucks.
I will, don't worry. So yeah, you've got people vouching for you too.
Those two, my queen stooges, we call them.
Yeah, right.
They give me all the info, allegedly. So a big thanks to them as well. Steph DeLander, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Until next time, guys, we're out. Talking to Steph DeLander was great. She went through a huge move that sent her from Australia to the United States. But no matter where you are, NordVPN.com/Fightful has you covered with their threat protection. Block online trackers, block annoying pop-up ads, block malware. Not only that, if you're moving from the U.S. to Australia, vice versa, maybe you're just traveling, NordVPN.com/Fightful, the fastest VPN in the world, helps you avoid geo blocks and geo restrictions and allows you to watch all your favorite shows, your favorite television services. You can subscribe to overseas services at a much more discounted rate. You can get a wider array of shows that are available to you thanks to NordVPN.com/Fightful. Not only that, how about this? You get up to 70% off your deal, an additional month free, and a 30-day money-back guarantee in case you don't like it, and it works on all your devices, phone, laptop, PC, any computer, your tablet, your router, all over the place. NordVPN.com/Fightful.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
If you've struggled for years to lose weight and have given up hope, did you know you can now access GLP-1 prescription medications at TryLifeMD.com? We're now offering eligible patients online access to GLP-1s, the breakthrough prescription medication that can help you lose body fat and weight. Listen to what people are saying.
It's fun to put on jeans that you couldn't get into 6 months ago.
Every morning, I look forward to getting on the scale.
For anybody who's struggling with their weight, it's a godsend.
And here's the best part. Your insurance may cover 100% of the cost of your medication. So go to TryLifeMD.com to have your eligibility checked right now. Get started today at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.